Thanks a bunch. Want a sausage?
Nah, I don't eat pork.
Are you Jewish?
I ain't Jewish, man. I just don't eat pork.
Why not?
They're filthy animals. I don't eat filthy animals.
Sausage tastes good. Pork chops taste good.
A sewer rat might taste like pumpkin pie, fool. I'll never know, because even if it did, I wouldn't eat that filthy motherfucker. Pigs sleep and ruin and shit. That's a filthy animal. I don't want to eat anything that ain't got enough sense to disregard its own feces.
How about dogs? Dogs eat their own feces.
I don't eat dogs either.
Yes, but do you consider a dog to be a filthy animal?
I wouldn't go as far as to call a dog filthy, but they're definitely dirty. But a dog's got personality, and personality goes a long way.
So by that rationale, if a pig had a better personality, he ceased to be a filthy animal.
We'd be talking about one motherfucking charming ass pig. It'd have to be the Cary Grant of fucking pigs. What's up, Fool Podcast? What's up, Fool Podcast? With Rodrigo Torres right here, Lisa over here, yeah, chilling with her new haircut. She fixed the other haircut.
What happened?
I had a bad haircut, and I think my stylist was emotional. She was telling some story. She was telling some story. This was, a month ago?
So what happened? You get your haircut and she's crying?
She's telling some story about her assistant and how her assistant, this little goth chick, she's real cool, but I felt bad for the story because she got institutionalized. She was suicidal and all this stuff. And then they numbed her up with drugs and she was all beside herself for seeing her that way. But she's telling me this as she's giving me the worst haircut I've had and the worst color job I had.
And then Lisa showed to the house that she got shocked there, bro.
That sucks. Fuck, the haircut sucked.
So I had to live with her for like a month. I had to go to San Francisco like that. Everything. I felt like shit. So I finally found this woman that was recommended to me in Pasadena. She fixed it. Yeah, this girl, and I felt bad, but I felt maybe you should have canceled this appointment. She was her assistant.
She used to sweep hair.
She washed my hair. She would sweep the hair. She would give her color, she would prep the color and stuff like that. But I don't know what happened, but I can't go back to that woman. I just can't. I felt like shit for weeks.
Peace.
I didn't want to wake up and have to do my hair again because I didn't know what to do. It was bad. I don't want to talk about my hair.
That's sold up, bro. She was part of the Nazi women instead of Gestapo.
Yeah, man, it's more traumatic for women to get their hair messed up than dudes.
I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't think it could be fixed.
Dude, you can shave your head. A chick, you can't, dog.
No.
You can, bro.
You could.
People start asking questions.
But they do start asking questions.
What happened, Pelona?
I'm an alt writer now.
But now it's on point.
Thank you, man. Yeah.
I like it.
You're back. You're happy. You look younger, too.
I think so.
You're not the Sarge no more.
What does the Sarge mean?
I don't know. Sergeant Harris.
Oh, my God.
You remember that book, man? Speaking of Sergeant Harris, it was, I don't know what the name of the book was. It was called Sergeant Harris, Fire the Cannon.
Never heard of that.
No, never had it in my library.
What was it about?
It was like a
Hardy
like
Boys,
baby. It was like a rhyming book with pictures. But then it will close with something, something, fire the cannon.
No, I never heard that. No?
Never had that for riff.
All right. How about Danny and a dinosaur?
I had that.
All right. The monster and me. Nobody.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
All right. Upcoming shows, people. Upcoming shows tonight, March 2nd. Tonight, we're in Hilo, Hawaii at the Palace Theater. So hurry up, man. Come on down. There's still plenty of seats available, and I mean plenty.
That's right, bro.
Saturday, March 3rd, Honolulu, Hawaii, at Blaisdell Center with Paul Rodriguez. Hey. We're going to be in Honolulu, Blaisdell Center with Paul Rodriguez. Man, I was trying to get ready for this trip, bro, like losing weight and shit, because I don't want to walk over there. People think I live there. I don't want people to walk up to me and go, Felipe, how many years you been living here, bro? How fat am I?
Where's the dog?
So you going to walk without a t-shirt, bro, or what?
Fuck that.
You going to show your nipples or what? I am. I don't care, dog.
The whole time? But or just when you get in the water?
You always show your body,
But I'm going to walk with socks in the water.
The fuck?
I just threw out.
You gotta get those
aqua shoes.
No, man. Yeah. I'm so confident after I fucking fix my own ingrown toenail shit, I could walk on fire.
Thought you were gonna get some Crocs.
Hell no.
Crocs. Crocs.
Well, you know what? I am looking for Crocs.
But I think Crocs are cool,
but
dude.
I don't want Crocs. Like,
you don't want the kind that I don't want people first to came out with.
But Mario Batali Crocs, the orange ones?
Yeah, I hate those. I don't want people to be looking at me and go, oh, look at the fucking fat ass chef. Or fat ass fucking kitchen help. Yeah. But I do like the Adidas ones that are Crocs.
That's I have some that look like slip-on Vans, and they're Crocs. They're waterproof, and they float. They're real light.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of getting something like that.
Yeah.
But, man, you guys should have seen my – well, at least I know because she lives with me. She's my wife. But, dude, my toe, the left one, I don't know how it got like that. Maybe with those 30,000 steps I did on shrooms in San Francisco.
No.
But, God damn,
it was because you cut your nail too short.
It was. Like, I'm going to get you, sucker.
It was, I'm going to get you. It was throbbing.
But I didn't know how bad it was. So I bumped into something.
Oh, my God. Those are the worst, dude.
I bumped into something, somebody, bro. It felt like somebody hit me with a hammer, bro. It felt like somebody stomped me. It was.
You get nauseous. It hurts so much, huh? Talk right
into it. What?
You got to talk right into the mic. You're talking way up here. I can't hear you. Don't start. I can't. I'm telling you. I'm trying to give you a hint. And you're not taking it. Get all mad.
Back to the toenail.
Toenail. It hurt.
You can't handle the toe.
It was throbbing. Man.
Don't anyway, act we, like that. Anyway, stop it.
Let me find something else. Because Lisa and I were talking.
Kill you.
I don't know what I said. We're talking about. Then I don't know why. I changed the story to Martin's feet.
Well, remember he had that big ass black toe that one time?
Yeah, but it wasn't an ingrown though.
No, it was just big.
Big though. It was huge, right?
Then what was like a camel nail or something.
He was all happy, right? He had met this chick. I don't know if it was on the road or somewhere. He had met her, and Martin shows up to the comedy condo or the hotel room, and he tells me and Ivan, "Hey man, this girl is different, eh? She's different. This girl is different." Then I think Ivan or me said, "What happened, bro? You show your feet or what?"
She called me Tony.
Then we started laughing and we didn't mention it again.
I think Mondo first seen that shit, right? And he started.
He was huge, bro.
Dang, he's a big ass toy.
He passed out, bro. It felt like, bro, like somebody shoved a toe on your thumb. No, somebody shoved a potato on your thumb. It was bad.
It was big.
Hey, man, you should have that guy. Hey, bro, you're listening? I know you're listening, man. Cause that fool drew you rollerblading, bro.
Yeah, but he gave me the 2018 body, dog. I used to rollerblade when I was 10, dog.
Oh, that's right. You were young when rollerblades came out. I was like 25.
Oh, they
24.
Shut up. You didn't have them, me.
The first time
you told
I saw
all these dates.
No.
Oh, because you got to get back to those.
We're talking about Hawaii, and then we got lost.
Oh yeah, toenails, Hilo. Huh?
You're gonna show your toes, and you're Hilo. Gonna wear socks.
Then I got March 9th through 11th, Phoenix at Stand Up Live. March 15th through 17th, Cleveland at Hilarities. March 23rd and 24th, Los Angeles at the Novo Downtown LA. March 30th, Austin, Texas. At Paramount Theater. March 31st, Atlanta, Georgia, at Variety Playhouse. Lots more dates. Check out FelipeWorld.com/tour for all dates and ticket links. Shout outs to C Stark 52, who liked the Cap G bonus episode and says we should have a local rapper, Ashton Myers.
Matthews?
We'll look into it, bro.
Look at 8 Mile over
we'll
here.
We'll look into it over here. I guess C Star 52 is an aspiring manager. I like the way people throw in big thank you after. Yeah. A big thank you. Yo, man, but y'all need graphics.
You got to get in there somewhere, right? Got to get your foot in the door.
Oh, go for it. But he wrote a poem, so I put it in there.
Smoke on the. It's Aston. Aston with a
dollar sign.
Yeah. Aston dollar. Nobody's gonna find that. Aston Myers. Aston Matthews.
The brother.
Smoke on the WTR and El Arroyano, Pato de Marrano. And Jack the Magician Electrician, who gave us a little Dr. Seuss style review. I'm a union electrician and I listen to your podcast often. I listen to it at work and at home. when I'm on a plane. I listen to it in a house. I listen to it while sitting with a mouse. I listen to it when I'm here. I listen to it when I'm there. Thank you for listening, Jack.
My poem had a short circuit. What happened?
That wasn't that. Look at this guy for plagiarism, bro.
Why? You seen that somewhere? From his son.
That's cool, bro. Thank you for listening, man. Jack, the magician, electrician. I guess he makes lights go off. You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah.
All right. So, bro.
What's up, fool?
What's up, fool? So, check this out, man. Check this out. I didn't want to go to a doctor, of course, right? Because you know me.
For what, the uncontrolled now?
Hell no. Because I thought, I don't have the time, bro. And then somebody told me that. I don't know who told me.
Did your own surgery at the house?
My publicist told me.
Damn.
She knows about
it. She knows everything.
Yeah, bro. She knows. Fucking Luis Guzman probably had one.
Yo, mama, I'ma get rid of this. Come over here to the room.
I was over here dancing the tango.
Bring your machete.
So I looked it up, bro. So they said, so I soak my feet in warm water for like 3 times a day.
Okay.
Because you got to soften that nail because it's hard as hell. Anybody who's listening, man, who's been limping for 2 years, this goes out for you too.
Anybody with a bloody sock.
I was wondering, you know, how am I going to get under that to pull it back out?
Yeah.
So this the Google said, get floss. And I don't mean cinnamon because it'll burn it. So I got floss once my nail was soft. And I pulled that thing back with the floss. Kept practicing every day, bro, with the floss. And I finally got it out. And now, bro, I'm walking like a ballerina. right now, I could kick a wall, bro.
But you corrected it, though, if you fixed it. I can't believe it.
Yeah, man. So if anybody listening out there, man, I am the ingrown toenail doctor now. And, man, if anybody with bad feet, man, I know a lot of people don't have health insurance, man. I'm just telling you, man. Soak your feet in water, okay? Every day, hot, warm water, and with vinegar maybe also, 3 times a day. And practice pulling your feet back, your toe back, every day.
Your toenail.
And get a floss and dig in there, man. That's every day. Every day. All your feet, every day, every day. Then little by little, man, you'll start seeing that nail start going back straight. And that's a bunion story for Felipe Esparza.
And the podiatrist.
What's up, fool, man? We're going to read a couple of quotes right here before we introduce our guest. Because I got prepared this time, man. I didn't just get the names wrong and start putting people that were born in Long Beach when they weren't really born there.
Nobody told you that either.
I have no desire to be a politician. I don't want to lead anyone. I have no practical ego. I am not ambitious. I merely want to do what is right. Once in every century, there comes a man who is chosen to speak for his people. Moses, Mao, and Martin are examples. Who's to say that I am not such a man? In this day and age, the man for all season needs many voices. Perhaps that is why the gods have sent me into Riverbank, Panama, San Francisco, Alpine, and Juarez. Perhaps that is why I've been taught so many trades. Who would deny that I am unique? For months, for years, not all my life, I sought to find out who I am. Why do you think I became Baptist? Why did I try to force myself into the Riverbank swimming pool? And did I become a lawyer just to prove to the publishers I could do something worthwhile? Any idiot that sees only the obvious is blind. For God's sake, I have never seen and I have never felt inferior to men, to any man or beast.
The man was never comfortable unless he was in the company of people who were crazier than he was.
And when he roared into your driveway at night, you knew he was bringing music, whether you wanted it or not.
Any combination of a 250-pound Mexican and LSD-25 is a potentially terminal menace for anything that can reach. And that is Oscar Zeta Acosta, Autobiography of a Brown Buffalo. And for those of you who are listening to me right now, just you guys letting you know that our guest right here, you know, I'm not gonna make stuff up, man. But I do have a book that Oscar Zeta Acosta wrote, and it's in my book right here. I'm just gonna find it to make sure I ain't no poser. I got it right here somewhere. And it's right here. Yeah, what's up, fool? Right here, man. I read 50% of it. It says right here. And it's, I don't want to show up, but internet's bad here. But it's The Revolt of the Cockroach People. Yes, I have it in my book. What's up, fool? We have Philip Rodriguez, right?
Yeah.
Right here. Yes, and he wrote and directed an awesome documentary about a person you guys don't bother even to look up or never bother to mention. This guy's not even in the history books. Like, you gotta find out about Oscar Zeta Acosta sometimes, man. You gotta find it by watching Fear and Loathing. Then you gotta look. You really like the movie. You gotta look. Okay, man, this guy that's playing Benicio, is he a real dude or something? Then you find out he's a real motherfucker. How did you find out about him, Rodrigo? You're a college grad.
Yeah, I found about him through that movie, and I heard about him in this course called History of American Racism, taught by Elliot Borkan, the Chicanismo and all that stuff.
And then we went to that exhibit at the
La Raza exhibit,
Gina
Autry Museum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is still going on, by the way, till next February 2019.
Are you serious? Yeah. I thought it was going to be this
February.
I thought
it was too.
Next
February. It's still going on, Autry Museum. And tell them you heard about it on the What's Up Fool podcast.
Yeah.
If you go by, give them a little donation when you go in.
Only exhibit you got to see there. I mean,
it's really cool. It's all the photos. The photos from the exhibit, from the beginning of the magazine
La Raza.
Through the end of it.
So
11
today,
years, I think.
We have Philip Rodriguez, he wrote The Rise and Fall of the Brown Buffalo, a documentary about Oscar Zeta Acosta, Chicano civil rights activist, author, attorney, also produced by Benicio del Toro. Philip is an award-winning documentary filmmaker who has made films for PBS for years, father of an attorney in Los Angeles. But let's get to know him, bro. We gotta read all this stuff, man.
Yeah, man.
What's up, fool?
What's up? Whenever I walk into a room and there's people who know who Oscar is, I'll immediately feel I'm with friends, more comfortable. And, you know, the guy deserved more recognition than he got. And he was fantastic, like so many Chicanos. This was a big man. This was a big man with a big soul and a big ego and a big project and a big ambition and big madness and a big panza. And the motherfucker was just totally marginalized. He's invisible. And it's ridiculous that a guy like this is a footnote. And we're just trying to correct it.
Do you think it was because he's too wild?
I think it was because he was too brown. I think it was because...
Too smart?
He was too smart. He was too threatening. He was... And for the polite little Chicanos...
for real, man. And there was a lot of haters.
For the university ones, he was a little too... rough and wild
on the
and
edges.
Cochino, and he was very candid.
He was the opposite of Martin Luther King, and kind of not as strict like Malcolm X. Malcolm X didn't do drugs.
Yeah, I mean, he was
didn't
just
think of seriously, huh?
He was had a lot of edge and a lot of wildness, and he was horny, and he ate a lot of burritos. But when you think about the way they wrote the civil rights history, it's always these saintly people trying to do the right thing.
And a lot of these people, they
were just trying to get laid. You know, Oscar said, you know, the revolution doesn't have to be a drag. And I think that's the kind of symbol that the kids at this point need. You know, because they think about the civil rights people and it's all these sainted people. You know, God bless Dolores or Caesar or whatever, but Oscar never won a hunger strike, not even for 20 minutes. You know? So I'm excited to be here, and I watched your HBO show the other day. Well, maybe it was Showtime, but it was so funny, and it was so right. And I recognized my own people when I saw you, and I saw Oscar in you, and the intelligence, the exuberance, the anger, the wild way of speaking, a really... you're my people, and you're also my tocayo, so by the way. So.
Hell yeah. I saw the documentary. I saw it this morning.
Oh, okay.
Well, we were supposed to watch it last night, but we got so tired and I was doing work.
Yeah, we were playing a trip. But I want to, like, when we went to the doc, we went to go see the exhibit, there was a little bit of Oscar.
Yeah, not a lot. He wasn't even prominent.
There was another guy there that you probably know him, maybe, because you seem to know a lot of stuff about the Chicano movement more than I know. But remember that guy that used to book at that season? What was his name? Raul.
Ruiz.
Raul Ruiz.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he was involved in the Chicano movement. But his face was all over the photos. And the reason I know him because I used to put up a comedy show for him, and all that money used to go for scholarships.
Ruiz was one of the co-founders of La Raza magazine.
A
very kind of heroic photographer who put his neck out there and took a lot of pictures that without Ruiz and a lot of his cohort, we wouldn't have any record of that era. It would all be
crazy?
Lies and stories and mentiras. And as it is, you know, because the history is so invisible, because histories of people, women and non-whites, really matters a lot less than the history of the people. The people that control things write the histories. They have the means of dissemination, of production, of making films, of greenlighting projects, TV shows, publishing books, and their stories the ones that get prized, that be considered the ones that are important traditionally. And obviously the implications of this are pretty profound and pretty terrible, because if you don't see yourself as important, you're going to really ingest the idea that you are indeed secondary, that you don't have any agency, that it's hopeless for you to even try to act because you don't fucking matter, because you are a fucking nigger. And I mean that in a pejorative old school way. So it's, you got to insist on, as you guys do, sit around here and talk and on your own spin and your own narrative. And so I'm just trying to introduce people that really have value, I think, not just as a past artifact, but something that we can use in the present moment. When this fool's coming in on the DACA kids, you know, you got to have somebody who's chingon enough, who's got enough fucking balls, madness, love to step the fuck up and get into the face of these pricks that are coming at you. So that kind of inspires the conversation that I want to.
So that's how hardcore Oscar was in those times.
Oscar was armed. Oscar had a.
That fool bought I remember telling Dr. Mary that fool took. That fool, he raised a gun in the air, bro.
In the courtroom. Yeah. You know, in the courtroom, he'd come in on mescaline. He'd have drugs, and he had this attache case. It was with decals and flower power all over it. And he'd come in descalzo to the courtroom. He'd come on barefoot sometimes to show absolute disrespect. And one day, he walked into the courtroom with a guayabera, right? And the judge says, Mr. Acosta, approach the bench. This is not acceptable clothing for a courtroom. Oscar says, excuse me, sir. That's a real gringo attitude. In my country, a guayabera is a formal wear. And I'm going to insist upon my right to do that. Well, Oscar ended up going to jail for contempt. But
For wearing a guayabera.
Right? So I like the guy because he's rebellious, but like you said before, he's not serious like Malcolm. And not to say Malcolm's not valuable, because he is. But Oscar is ours.
He's the everyday man.
In some ways, you know, he also had this really quality of being transparent about himself. Right? He was uncomfortable with his big mestizo cylindrical body, and he.
Rodrigo too. He wears three jackets.
Mestizo cylindrical body.
You like it?
That's a good description. Yeah.
And so he was just kind of raw. You know, he wasn't a saint. He was a regular person, and with a lot of flaws and a lot of defects. And he was probably bipolar and crazy as fuck.
My favorite part is when he goes into the bar. Let's see. He goes to the bar and says,
"Aspen, bro, by himself. The only Mexican fool walks in and goes,
what, it meant Hunter?
He goes, hey.
Yeah. He said, what did he say?
He said, hey.
I'm the trouble you've been looking for.
I'm the trouble you've been looking for.
Like, that's his introduction to his bar. But see, I can see you doing that. I can see Felipe has done that.
Yeah, did you relate to that identity of Oscar? Talk to me about that.
I related, man, because
everybody in the world has said you should.
I was born for that role.
Been in that
When I was in Boston, some guy told me that he had some guy told me that to get that book, the Revolt of the Cockroach People, because he said, "Man, is there ever a movie, man, or a play you could play that guy?" And he goes, "All right." But then I found out that he was the guy that was his name called the Wild Samoan.
I think he's.
But I remember, man, because I remember in my stand-up comedy, like people don't like it. Like when I wrote that, like right now, some of that material, a lot of people get sad. You know, they get too hurt. Like when I mentioned that
social justice warrior.
When I mentioned like that, that we have racism in our own culture too, man. Like when I say that, whenever we see a darker Mexican, we look at him. Remember who invited that? Who invited Chocomil? Right? And I said, like, to be funny.
That's funny.
I said to be funny because it's true. Right? But some people use it as, now I'm racist.
I'm promoting colorism now. Instead of opening the door to discussing that through humor instead of a lecture.
Let's find out why then. Let's find out why Telemundo never has a Prieto or a dark African. There is black Mexicans. Why isn't there a black Mexican announcing sports?
Why isn't there a black Colombian? Those are shot in Colombia too. Yeah, in Colombia. Why isn't there that?
And then we won't question that. Yeah. They're gonna question about how they get me off the air. And I feel like that's how this dude was, man. That's how Oscar was, because he didn't everybody wanted to surround himself with only smart intellectuals instead of being around the real people who actually need the help. That fool got all the cholos together, bro. And then all those I always call these guys the 3-1000s because you know,
like Terminator.
They're Terminator. They're Mexican American, but they're the new versions, you know. They come with degrees, you know. They don't like that movie Blood and Blood Out. They think American meat shouldn't be part of our culture.
Well, there is a movement afoot. Well, I don't know how big a movement, but within the Latino social justice warriors that you see, and this is not every Chicano activist or Latino activist at all, but there's a small percentage that just take everything too far, and it closes doors. It gets people to stop. People tune you out.
It makes them all look crazy. Like, oh, they're not together.
Yeah, and there is a movement also by those same people to split Chicano into old school Chicano and new school Chicano, and like these old school Chicanos are these people who think like that. If people like, it's almost like looking down on people who might have been, who might be a veterano now, you know, they sold drugs at one point, you know, like, because that doesn't promote positive Chicano values. But this is part of the fabric of
the whole our world.
We're in a stage of becoming. Got to figure that most Latinos that are here come after after the 1965 Immigration Act, right? So the most Latinos in this country, by the great proportion of them, come in the 80s.
We came in the 80s. No, right? We came, actually, my green card says 81.
There you go. So
yeah, I came over here before Ronald Reagan did the crazy law,
the amnesty,
I was already fixed.
1986.
We got ready for him.
So, you know, we're just new. We're just settling into this place. And to think that we're going to be completely polite or completely organized or completely have one mind is stupid. We're just brand new people. Think about the Jews. They're 5,000 years talking to each other, wandering around the desert, learning how to read, practicing their prayers. We are just started. So obviously it's going to be messy. Obviously, it's going to be ridiculous sometimes. Obviously, it's going to be conflictual. It should be. And we have to stop being so fucking polite and so doctrinaire and just mix it up a little bit. And this is why what you all do here is great, because it's conversation that's loose and informal and intelligent and free. And we have to speak freely. And that's one of the reasons that comedians, I think, are so valuable now, because you guys can cross those lines that others can't and do it in a way that's appealing to people. And Oscar had that kind of quality, right? Just bring reality.
What's your background? Where'd you come from?
I'm from L.A. My grandparents, I was born in the South, San Gabriel. And then they moved me to Glendale when I was a boy. And in Glendale at that time, it was the headquarters of the American Nazi Party from 19... 19- wow. 65 to 1982. So when I was a boy, wow. I mean, seriously, second grade, I remember, American Nazi Party.
Oh, oh.
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of fucking knuckleheads. And they'd march around and give out pamphlets and say, no nigger spicks. And it was a sundown town into the 50s, which meant that if you drove through, if you were non-white, and you were there after dark.
Where at?
In Glendale. They would roll up, the cop would roll up in a bike and say, Sonny, get the fuck out. So you couldn't be there after dark. My father and mother, we were a very dark-skinned family, we still are, and they put us there in a good neighborhood. So it was very interesting. And I remember going in second grade, I had to piss. Went to the little urinal, little boy's urinal, and a couple boys got around the side of me and looked at my pee-pee. And, of course, they were after they got over the shock of this enormity. They said, whoa, that's brown too. So, you know, it really was the other. And you learn about white people in a really great way when you're in an environment like that. I don't know where I start. You asked me where I was from, so that's where I'm from. My grandparents were Mexicans.
When the Armenians show up?
Armenians don't show up until way later. Again, so it's super white bread from
65
to 82.
White people are gone now.
White people are bolting. Even my mom, she still lives there. And she says, mijo, you know, these Armenians, I'm not so sure about them. She says, sometimes I miss the racist gringos.
Oh, my gosh.
Instead of the racist Armenians?
You know, they're finding their way, too, right? They're pushing and shoving, and they're insecure, and they don't know where they're at. And they got their little
more
movidas that's going on. And they're like any group. Yeah. Think about the Koreans before the riots. I may just go to Koreatown. I'd get thrown out of bars because they didn't want anybody but their own. They were paranoid. They were afraid. And, of course, they got into that bronca with the blacks, right, because they didn't understand African-American behavior, and the whole thing blows up. But now you go to Koreatown, and they're chill. They're comfortable. And so, you know, everybody's got to find their way here, and you got to elbow each other out to understand who your neighbor is and know how to get along with each other and how to thrive. And I think L.A. is great right now, don't you think? You like, I mean, the whole polyglot immigrant mixture.
I've always loved L.A.
Yeah, L.A.'s great.
I've always liked L.A.
Yeah. Rodrigo, you're very quiet over there, brother.
Oh, yeah, I'm just taking it all in.
Oh, okay.
He's also known as Silent Bob.
Just taking it all in.
If I'm Riverside, man, you know, not the fault.
Yeah, where the men are made. Where did you first get acclimated to?
Oscar?
Yeah.
You know, Oscar's one of those things. My mom was friends with Oscar's sister. I went to college and I read his book, and it was fascinating to me. And so I really wanted to make a picture a long time ago.
And you said your father's an attorney?
My father was an attorney also. Yeah, yeah. My father was an attorney and a Mexican-American attorney in that era, right?
Right.
And I remember him telling me one day about a big fat Mexican who showed up to court with bare feet and, you know.
So he was a witness to all those sort of,
yeah,
okay.
And he didn't disapprove of him necessarily. He thought he was a little bit, you know, nasty, but amusing.
Yeah, because I know he's wild, but I still treat him as an intellectual because he had a lot of great ideas.
Oh, listen, that's what I'm saying. The guy was marvelous. He was fucking strong. He was a very good in the courtroom, but he was also, you know, he was wild. And you can be both things. That's the
point. Right. And there's so many different things to be, especially when you're Mexican. I know there's a lot of Mexican people said, oh, I always had white teachers. There was always like white cops. In my first in elementary school, my principal was Mexican. Our district attorney was Mexican. Wow. So it was different for me. I always seen those positions. To me, it wasn't like a chip on my shoulder coming out to the world. Now I got to fucking do something with these white people. And you also see different types of white people, not just that one white person that's, you know, racist or whatnot.
So. Sure. I mean, I got white people in my family, and I love them, and they're my people. And there's no the contradiction, because obviously as we elevate – and we become more, as you suggest, part more of the leadership of things. Then we become it's less conflictual until a moment like this,
totally.
Where whites now feel like they're under
especially
attack.
Especially right now.
Well, again, it rotated back.
Time. Oh, totally.
Yeah, they rotated back because basically one guy, Lyndon Johnson, once said, "This is like a political strategy." He once said, "If you can convince the lowest white man that he's higher than the highest black man, you can pick his pockets forever." And that's exactly what they're doing.
Oh, that's what happened now.
Because when these white people saw Obama elegantly, Harvard Law Review and shit, walking up the stairs of Air Force One, and they're fucking struggling to pay for their Pop-Tarts or whatever the fuck they're doing, they flipped their shit. You know, basically assaulted their fundamental sense of whatever less dignity they got. So dream. When they witness this, that it just it undermined the rest of their stability.
My American dream is in shambles.
Precisely. I mean, they got less money, they got less health care, they got less everything, they got less prestige, houses are harder to buy, their kids are on oxy-fucking-cotton.
And they're not living the lives of their parents' generation. Precisely. Like they're always comparing themselves
that's,
to
that's
that.
Something that's weird.
And then they see a fucking Negro in the Air Force One. And, you know, that they come undone.
And one thing cool that's about
Ain't no
Oscar,
more raccoon hunt.
That he was an activist. He was actually speaking up when the kids were getting the
My
shit kicked out of by the cops.
Don't sleep with me no
and
more.
That's what a lot of people weren't doing that because, you know, we're more of a passive culture, you know what I mean? But he, like, kind of like... brought forth this, you know,
roof
bring
fell on my dog.
You know what I mean? Kind of like, you know, the Black Panthers butt.
That's a great point that you make, that the passivity of our people, that we're kind of almost pathologically inclined toward conciliation and afraid of conflict.
Right.
And that's a problem.
We just want to work.
It's a problem because you got to, listen, I mean, you got to get in people's faces.
No te metas en líos, mijo.
Yo no quiero problemas. Ya les dije.
Precisely.
Do you think that comes from being part of families who did come here as immigrants and they don't want to rock the boat?
I think it comes from
Catholicism, I think.
It comes from Catholicism too, maybe.
The effects of colonialism.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden you're swarmed by new people with a new set of order and you're dislocated. And think about the indigenous people of Mesoamerica, the mestizos. You don't know what your
Even
place
Asian
in the social
people.
Order is.
Mm-hmm.
You got a rough authoritarianism. You know, it's kind of dominating you
people above
and making
below
you feel
you,
ashamed.
Yeah.
The black hats.
You know, wiping you out with self-shame, race shame, body shame. And
Asians too, man. They're afraid. They never call the cops.
They don't.
Going in Chinatown, they get yelled at.
Oh, pushed. Hell yeah. Like
I seen Chinese people get pushed by their bosses when I was there. Like yelled at in their face. And they just put their head down, go to work.
Yeah, and that's a class thing,
never
too.
They never fight back.
Because in Mexico, it's
they're
different.
They're there all day, bro. All day. Like I've been to a Chinese restaurant when I got there, and the same guy is there cooking all day.
12-hour
like,
shifts and shit.
Nobody gonna step in and go, hey, you know you're only supposed to be here 8 hours, right? Yeah. No.
Hell no.
He's nice to me.
Because right here, you have class, like a class system. You know, it's not as hardcore as it in Mexico. But in Mexico, if you ain't got no money, you can't hang out with people that have money. Here it's different. You know, everybody knows a rich guy.
No, for real, in Mexico you can't?
You can say whatever it is, you got family. That, you know, my family has a rich. But motherfuckers, they got real money. I'm talking about that real ass money. You know what I mean? You can't hang out with them. It's just not going to happen. They're going to bring poor people.
Like, there's no way Chepo will be in the same room with Russell Peters.
Not
in Mexico.
And that's blatant out there, dude. You know what I mean? And just look at everybody on TV. Look at even their political leadership. They're all mostly white. You know,
absolutely. So, you know, we haven't had our crack at it yet. Since the time before the, you know, Columbus and Cortez arrived, the mestizo, we've been kind of on the bottom of the totem pole, and we continue to be. But you have to, what I love is you can be like you step on the stage, and you're not making apologies for anybody. You're just a rude, free-spoking, you're not malevolent, but you're going to do your thing the way you're going to do it. And that kind of posture is what Oscar had, is what I think that we should encourage. I don't want to be rude, but you can be rude too. You know,
you can step on toes.
The squeaky wheel.
Step on the right ones.
Gets the oil.
Gets the fucking grease. And so that's another thing I like about this guy, Oscar, is that he doesn't give one fuck, you know, and he's not going to back down. And he's absolutely fundamentally, because he's bipolar crazy motherfucker, he doesn't fucking care.
Yeah, very unorthodox. And was there any relationship with him and Cesar Chavez and all that other stuff?
Yeah,
or?
I think that, you know, vaguely, the thing is, yeah, sure, those guys had some kind of knowledge of one another. But Cesar is rural, right? It's farm workers, which my grandparents were. They picked fruit up and down the coast, and they were always agriculturists. But Oscar was an urban animal, like all of us now. Latinos, the whole mythology that we're like Cesar Chavez, you know, picking up shit, you know, that's no longer the case. We're suburban people.
Yeah, man.
And Oscar was like us. He ate the fucking sandwiches out of the goddamn refrigerator, you know, and he didn't pick nothing. He picked when he was a kid. But, you know, he was urban. He was college educated.
I see that guy drinking punch out of the gallon, bro.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm talking about, bro. They're great.
He was
sandwich at least as that.
He liked hueras. He liked negras. You know,
me too.
He was all good for him. He wasn't perfect, man. He was an animal. Like
I like that when you in the documentary, You touched on parts that a lot of people in will never admit, like when he said that he never spoke Spanish. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people who don't speak Spanish right now, who front that they know how to speak Spanish. Yeah. Okay, we're not gonna mention Ted Cruz and Mark Rubio, but anyways, but you know they front like
Rubio speaks Spanish.
Yeah,
but Cruz doesn't.
But anyway, they asked him about they asked him one time about food and he didn't know.
Right. Yeah. And the thing about Mexicans don't care. Other Mexicans don't care. Don't speak Spanish. They just care. Are you down?
Yeah, that's it. I said we care about. We don't care if you're third generation, fourth generation. We don't care if you grew up in Montebello or you grew up in Pico Union. If you're down, you're down. That's if you can't speak Spanish, that's cool. Okay, be down.
I was with my brother and we were in Guadalajara. Happened to meet there. Guadalajara. And Mayor Antonio was there giving a speech in Spanish. We're watching on TV, right? Villaraigosa, yeah. And he was giving a speech, and it was mucho Spanish like mine, right? And I felt so proud that he was just fucking it up and bungling it like I would, you know, putting
go for broke,
making the wrong words and shit. And I felt like that's my Spanish, and I'm proud of it.
You know, that ain't too bad for Macholo from City Terrace. Eh?
How many me entiendes? He lived
there. Me entiendes.
No, Nintendo.
¿Sabes qué?
¿Sabes qué? Y después yo dije.
You know what, Raza?
Yo te dije.
I went to Berkeley, and there was this guy who used to work in a Chicano guy that he represented Burbank. Himself as the most Chicano of all Chicanos, right? He was a pure Chicano. And the only fucking word he knew inside of say in Spanish was, ¿sabes qué? And every other thing he would say was in English, and then ¿sabes qué?
Ten guys like that.
Harp on that little word.
Two long-haired comedians. One named Shang and the other one who looks like him.
No, there's a... but I feel like with activism, any sort of activism, I don't understand why there have to be rules.
There is no
like,
rules.
There shouldn't be rules about how you should behave. So you say, you know, people say would describe him as a flawed... You know, he's flawed for an activist, right? But what is flawed? You know, what are the rules for being an activist? Because I said about feminism, you know, and people, there are women who come down on women who want to be a housewife. They don't want to work. They want to raise kids. They want to get married. They want to do that.
It's on you.
It's on you. For me, it's always been about choices, having equal choices in life.
Totally.
And it begins and ends there for me as a feminist. But there are all these other rules that people come in. You're not acting right.
And once you have a fucking animal like this guy being the president, this fucking pig, this rampant sack of shit. No, the notion that we would ask activists or women to have a higher standard than this fucking animal is great. So tell me about
you calling an animal. Okay. I'm not an animal. I love people. Okay.
I was going to say... about that.
It's getting better. It's good.
It's getting better, I know. Yeah. Reese, that's what I like about that professor from Masisa. He's not out there every day on his Facebook talking about what he did or what he...
Yeah, bragging.
And a lot of so-called activists right now in this particular day and age...
Selling T-shirts.
Every day on Twitter. Like, what really? Ain't doing nothing but being a keyboard warrior.
How you gonna draw?
You know what I mean? Seriously. I mean, like, I'm talking about activism. Like, if you're a landlord and somebody gets hurt in that house, you're going to give them free rent until he gets fixed. Help them out.
Some people think that just by posting a photo of a tapatio sauce and saying that you grew up eating it, that's their activism for the day.
Are you for 2 hours a day at your house teaching kids how to read, the neighbors how to read, get them access to information? I mean, come on. That's stuff that you ain't going to get necessarily paid for. Everybody wants to get paid for the activism and wants to get likes for it. That's what I see.
No, sure. They want to get gold stars. Like, and they want to be a pat on the back. And when indeed some of these old Chicano guys, man, they're the guys that ran away when the shit got hard. And now they're the ones you see every weekend giving the speech, convening little talks to tell you how great they were. And they were just bullshit people. So
yeah, I didn't see them in no photos.
Yeah, I know. And that's a gem, dude, that they were able to salvage all that and document what they did. But that's what I'm saying about people that actually are doing something and doing it out of the kindness of their heart, how they're believing, you know, believing in Jesus Christ and all that, but you're not actually sharing it with your brothers, regardless of what color they are. Because there was also a Hungarian kid that got shot and killed with right there by the cops.
Yeah, Hungarian Jew, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that goes forward. He's putting his neck out for everybody that's, you know, living in those neighborhoods. He was too. So we can't forget dudes like that.
I'm not sure that guy wasn't an informant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
If he was, that's what you get. No, he's playing. But nevertheless, he was on, I mean, regardless of the
fact. Did a documentary about Ruben Salazar?
Yeah, that was a couple years ago, yeah. Another figure from that era that, again...
You think his death affected Oscar a lot?
Sure, I mean, it affected a whole bunch of them because
they slowed down their movement.
You know, it wasn't the revolutionary guys that got killed. It was this middle-class journalist that gets killed. And these other heroes, most of them just went into hiding.
Because they're all, if that can happen to this dude, what's going to happen to me? Maybe?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it also tells you how deep the conviction may not have been. Oscar doubled down after that, and he went hard, and he called in Hunter Thompson, and he said, Hunter, I need you to write about this. You have access to Rolling Stone magazine.
Right, give him a
national
platform.
Crazy thing, precisely. So Oscar went on the offensive in a big way after that. A lot of these so-called people that traipse around like they were heroes went underground or just went low-key. But Oscar amped it up.
Because it seems like it kind of died after that, right?
I think a lot of things died. You know, I think, you know, once the white kids stopped getting drafted, they left. They went back to the middle class hustle. Those baby boomers that were so active in the anti-war movement.
Right.
Once the draft stops, they have no stake in women's rights anymore. They have no stake in black rights anymore. They're going back to being straight up white Pecker Woods and going for the gold.
A lot of those guys ended up in corporate positions, corporate leadership positions.
Yeah. The hippies ruled the country at that
point. I know the guy who started the Tofutti company and his friend, and that guy used to live on the farm in Tennessee, like the hippie farm, the commune. He runs, well, I don't know about now, he's retired probably, but he was running Tofutti Corporation in New Jersey. It was weird. It was like, and he was all about like, you know, that fast-paced lifestyle.
A lot of the guys are on the make, you know, and a lot of the Chicanos. And well, I just read a book biography about Jan Wenner, the guy that founded Rolling Stone magazine. The guy these people made fortunes, nearly billions, hustling the revolution. But that's always going to be the case.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, you still got to act, as you suggested. Try to speak truthfully and do the right thing.
Where people going to find the movie when it comes out?
Where are they going to find it?
It's on Where? PBS.
Oh yeah, PBS. It's going to be on PBS, but I don't even know the
March,
date.
March 23rd.
Thank you very much. March 21st at 9 p.m.
23rd, yeah.
And so it's going to. The great thing is that the network provides, it's going to be seen in every market. So it's not just teaching Chicanos their own history. But
for free, people.
But this is for everybody. So some knucklehead in Memphis or in Green Bay, Wisconsin or a young person, a 13-year-old white girl, you know.
Or City Terror, knuckleheads.
They're all going to have access to this part of our history and to a character that's more like us than a lot of that they know.
Did you speak to anybody that that told you how pissed off Oscar was when he called him a 300 Samoan instead of making him Chicano? Because I always personally never liked when they do that, like when they take a role that was meant for somebody, but then they change it so much that
it becomes something else.
He becomes something else, told him what he really was.
I saw the documents, and I talked to him, Oscar's lawyer, who's a friend, this Jewish guy, Neil Herring, and he described how full of rage and felt betrayed Oscar felt. And Oscar threatened to sue Rolling Stone magazine. So stop the publication of Fear and Loathing. And in fact, he stopped the making of the first film about Fear and Loathing successfully because he was so pissed off at Hunter. And so Rolling Stone and its affiliates came to Oscar and said, hey, we got a problem, right? He says, yeah, we got a problem. Well, what if we give you a book deal? And out of that conflict, out of that threatened lawsuit, Oscar got a book deal to make his two terrific nutty.
Oh, they came from that. That's where his book deals came from. Oh, I didn't know
about Buffalo, right?
Wow. He was basically, Oscar was claiming, I own 50% of Fear and Loathing.
Yeah.
And if you don't give it to me, I will not allow you to publish this. So he muscled up on these dudes, and that's where his lawyer training came in handy.
Hell yeah.
And got himself the book. And really, without those books, we wouldn't be talking about Oscar Costa. We wouldn't know a whole lot of that era. So he did us a favor. Unfortunately, Oscar was really a mess, you know?
Why do they mention so much Dolores Huerta, Cesar Chavez, they mention JFK, Robert F.K. How come no, nothing about him? Like, why isn't there a mural? Why isn't there a mural somewhere?
Because
why are our children not taught that? Why nobody mentions him like and saying, you know, listen, bro, this guy fought for your ass, dog. This lawyer was fucking battling, was fighting cases that nobody wanted to take.
Oh yeah, man.
What's your answer to that question?
My answer to that is that there was not necessarily that they were passive, but They were creating a union. It was a farm workers union, and you attach it to the Democratic Party, and then you attach that. They're Mexicans from here that could vote, so then there you have that. That's why I think there's political.
And listen, Dolores Huerta is establishment. She was in the Hillary Clinton circle, right? So she's an establishment Democrat, established apparatchik of a major party. And so she's useful to them. She's useful to rich people, to rich white people that run the Democratic Party, that make most of the decisions about the Democratic Party, but try to do it on the backs of non-whites and non-white votes. So,
and they were against illegal immigration.
Well, they called them wetbacks.
Yeah.
They used to beat up the scabs that were actually from Mexico that go in there and take those positions from
the
people
union,
that
though.
Were.
So her presence, her identity flatters whiteness in some way. Oscar wasn't in that business.
And in essence, they were conformists.
Yeah.
But I think also at the same time, you have people, other Mexican-American groups who were in the establishment who wanted to ignore someone like Oscar, too, themselves. You know, and they helped him get buried in history as well.
I can associate myself with a fat drunk.
Well, yeah, like...
That fits all the stereotypes of Mexicans, fat drunk.
Well, it's the same as, like, you know, ask a Mexican not... covering you when you won Last Comic Standing or talking about it.
Yeah, one time, the guy that goes...
You don't fit guy that
look. This guy that had a series at the OC Weekly. It was called Ask a Mexican. And one time when I won Last Comic Standing, I told Lisa, you know, you should email that guy. I said, I want to do a little article about a Mexican winning Last Comic Standing. No response, nothing. Like, I guess I didn't fit the 4 years of graduating college.
Criteria.
A degree in Chicano studies. But now,
here
we are now, man, with the main guy right here.
I think that a lot of, you know, that's what they call respectability politics. They were trying to appear to be respectable in the eyes of whites and the eyes of each other. I mean, I went to people for money. This woman who used to be the head of MALDEF, and Oscar was a lawyer for MALDEF. And I asked her, can you find it? She wanted nothing to do with Oscar Costa.
Wow.
So there was a whole bunch of those fancy Mexican Americans of that generation that just turned their back on Oscar. Most of them did. Because until Trump started coming around and they realized, oh man, we've given up way too much. And so maybe we can make use out of Oscar in terms as a rebellious figure. Because they'd forgotten how to fight. I mean, a lot of that generation.
Oh, they're making money now.
The Democratic
Party. They're in the chips.
The Democratic Party forgot how to fight too. They're a bunch of wimps too.
The guy that founded the National Council of La Raza, he sent his kids like Andover, best schools and stuff. So they turned the Chicano hustle into, you know, elite status.
I had a chance to go to that school, by the way. When I was in El Sereno Junior High School, everybody applied for four different private schools, and that's the one that said yes to me. But since I was like living in the housing projects, I was trying to explain to my mom, no, ¿para qué vas a ir hasta tan lejos? Like, no, she just turned me off.
Really?
Probably wouldn't I be here, bro, if I went to Andover.
You're right.
You probably have a haircut.
I would have been a conservative motherfucker right now. Hating my mom and dad.
You'd be killing it.
In that case, you'd be loving it.
Yeah, man, so that was crazy you mentioned that.
You'd have a Tesla, too.
Yeah, man.
We could have a Tesla.
You're hitting on other
I would have started Pornhub, bro. So
that's what we're showing this film after it gets over the PBS run, by the way.
So you're right with what you just said right now.
Yeah, I think I'm right most of the time.
And also, you did a documentary with George Lopez, too, right?
Yes.
Green
is
the New Brown.
Brown is the New Green.
Brown is the New Green.
Are you know George?
Oh, yeah, we know George.
You know him well?
Not well.
Felipe
well.
Do you know him well? Yeah. What do you think of George?
He took me to Dodger Stadium.
No, he took you to Houston.
Cool as fuck.
Astros.
I like George.
He went to the World Series.
George.
I really liked him.
He's a funny motherfucker.
Hell yeah.
Next time, ask him for two tickets.
Yeah, we met him in 2000 when he was hosting Que Locos. Yeah. He was killing it,
He's been good to you, too?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, see, he's been good to Felipe, and so a lot of people say, he doesn't help other Latino comics.
Sure, he does. George is real.
I think
he just
George
doesn't
is
help
selective.
All of them. You know? You gotta be selective sometimes.
There was this whack-ass comedian named Cisco, and he was crying, right? That George, like, he kept emailing and tweeting George Lopez on Twitter over and over like a big pussy, because this guy is a big pussy. And he goes, hey, man, how can you don't help all that Rasta? How can you help all that Rasta? How can you do this? How can you do that? How can you do this? And then I emailed that piece of shit guy, and I said, listen, bro, how come you're going to bother this guy? You know, why should he? Go check Seinfeld's Twitter right now. Who asked? How many Jews are begging right now? How many Jews are asking for more money for the rabbi, bro?
Go check Chris Rock, bro.
How many people are asking him for money right now? It seems like a Chicano or a Mexican American or a Cuban guy or a Peruvian guy cannot be successful without fucking people leeching. Or saying they're not doing enough. Oh, you're not doing nothing for La Raza, bro. Me being up here is doing a lot for La Raza.
Fuck yeah.
For me, like, even when people say that, oh, Paul Rodriguez never did nothing, and that piece of shit comedian saying that George never did nothing, let me tell you, man, his presence is doing enough. Just like Black Panther. Black Panther's presence is doing a lot for a young African American who never had, who never thought he could be a superhero. Now he thinks, yeah, man, I could be a superhero.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm not just black man.
You see a dude like George Lopez.
Or Black Dynamite.
It's brown and shit, and he's up there representing.
Yeah, like with George.
Destroying it.
And one thing that Rodrigo Torres mentioned about George Lopez is that he gives hope for a lot of people because he's dark. He's a dark Mexican. What's his name? Oscar. He's a dark fat Mexican. Yeah. He represented us. And you know what? And George, and everyone, what did you say about there was no way that fool would be famous in Mexico the way he looks? Who? George.
Oh, no, of course not. Yeah. But then, on top of everything else, when he first busted out, when he got super famous, he was funny as fuck.
That's all he cares.
That doesn't matter. Rodney Dangerfield funny. You know what I mean? Like, just like blowing it up.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of people that come up to you that I've seen come up to you after shows or say to you on social media and stuff, you make me proud to be Mexican. Like, you know, I mean, they find something in you that makes them proud.
You know what, Rasa?
But you're not up there preaching. Yeah. There's many ways to
imagine this whole thing, dude. Fuck all that.
Whatever.
All hail to George, for real. George is good.
Right now. So Benicio Del Toro, he produced your movie?
Benicio Del Toro.
What did I say? Yeah.
Del Toro. Look at him. He just laughed at you.
You did say Benicio Del Toro.
Yeah. I was a little confused.
See that face? That face right there.
That's Luke Torres, right? The demon face. Luke Torres with a leather vest.
Oh my God, dude.
Benicio stepped in and was
so great. You went to Berkeley?
I went to Berkeley's undergrad, yeah.
Undergraduate?
Yeah.
My first ever comedy show was in Berkeley.
Where at?
For some students. I got booked for $150. No, I was so excited, I didn't even ask, is there a hotel? And it was for a guy, his name was Killer. And I performed.
And Killer was a student?
Yeah. There was no microphone, just a little lapel.
No way.
He put this guy put his own show together. It had nothing to do with the school. Damn. Nothing, bro.
How did it go over?
To my dorm room.
I was funny, man, but then it got cold at night because we had nowhere to stay.
Oh, dude.
Did you really have nowhere to stay?
Gets cold in the Bay, bro.
No, man.
Yeah.
So
Berkeley's a great place.
How long have you been doing on
films? I've been doing these for about 20-some years, I think. Wow. I went to UCLA Film School, and then I figured I like kind of documenting real stories.
How long did it take you to put this one together?
Oh, this one would pop a few years. You know, I've been thinking about it for about 20 years and not wanted to, but somebody else had the rights, or this person had the rights. Some movie actors had the rights. People were trying to make a film about Oscar for many years and unsuccessfully, because there's, in a traditional kind of conventional Hollywood format, you have to cast a big fat Mexican, and there's no big fat Mexicans who are box office, right? So we had to do it in a way that you didn't need someone that was famous to cast it. You had some of the footage we used of the real Oscar, and we combine it with performance of someone who's kind of playing Oscar. So I've been wanting this a long time. It's been a kind of a dream come true, and I'm really happy and feel lucky that I got to do this.
And you also, with your films, you do the producing as far as getting the funding and all that?
Yeah, I raise the money, yeah, basically.
On top of it being released by PBS, I'm sure they give you a little bit.
Yeah, CPB, we gave a lot of it. Okay. And I was actually lucky because there was a Chicano from San Antonio who was in the position of authority, which never happens. And I went to pitch him, and he said, Zeta? Brown Buffalo? He goes, I got a first edition in my home library, and it was fantastic. And so he understood what I was after, and he understood what it was. And I'd gone to other people; they'd say, "What the fuck? Who's this fat fucking Mexican?" It wouldn't have worked, but it worked.
See this photo right here that was in your movie.
Oh, that's a great photo.
This photo right here.
That's from La Raza collection, right?
That's my neighborhood right there.
No shit.
Right there, that's where I grew up. That's the Pico Gardens housing projects. Wow. Right there in that corner, that's where everything changed. Where right there where the kids are standing, even though it's like they're doing little protests. Right here, man, where my life changed.
How so?
I bit someone's ear off right there.
Did you really?
I was on PCP.
When, come on.
Yeah.
Tell the story about it.
My last time I was in my neighborhood, it was right there. The last time I saw it, it was right there where these kids are standing.
It's the beginning of him becoming a comic.
That's a preschool right there. And we used to jump in that preschool and jump into the preschool. And
how did that change? What happened to you after
that?
Oh,
I got crazy, man. I got into a crazy fight right there where those kids are standing.
Were you really on angel dust?
Yeah, man.
And what does that feel like?
Oh, man, it feels like the Hulk, but with, like you're the Incredible Hulk, but you just have no control of anything.
So you have incredible power. Strength, crazy, man. But you don't feel coordinated on it?
I feel coordinated. When I woke up the next day, I was full of blood. Like I looked like a walking dead.
Because you've been in conflicts? Shit,
huh? Yeah.
You don't even feel pain with
that. I don't feel
shit.
No pain, bro. Damn.
But what happened was you got... That guy came after you, I guess, or you were afraid they were going to come after you.
There you go.
Well, right. Well, the story, yeah. He wants to know how it changed your life.
Oh, what happened was, the guy went to the hospital. He didn't want to press charges.
Motherfucker.
Because what?
Is it this motherfucker? He didn't want to press charges.
He didn't want to press charges, so he said he's going to kill me, I guess, not if he ever sees me again. So Father Greg Boyle from Homeboy Industry,
sure,
he put me into rehab. And I went into a rehab for about a year.
This was before Homeboy existed.
Homeboy Industry. Yeah. It was called Job for the Future.
You were addicted to that stuff?
No, I was addicted to crack and violence.
No shit.
Yeah.
So how did you get to become a comedian after all that?
Oh, when I came out of rehab, I went to the library and I asked the librarian to help me find books on comedy writing. And she found me this book called Gene Perrette's Comedy Writing Step by Step. And another one, Steve Allen. And
no shit.
During rehab, though, you made that list of five things that you wanted to do in your life. It was one of the counselors who was a priest, right?
Yeah.
He told you guys to make the list of five things.
He wanted to know, like, write down your five dreams that you want to do. So my first dream was, I have this dream where I'm holding money, and when I wake up, it's gone. And another dream where... I'm naked in class. Then he gave me the list back. He goes, no. Not your dreams. Your goals. I said, I don't like soccer. No, what you want to be in life. Oh, so it was like, I didn't even know what I want to be in life. And I was 20. First thing I wrote was, I want to be a comedian. Because I saw this album of Bill Cosby, my brother Russell, whom I sleep with. And then, I love Olive Garden, so I want to go to Olive. I want to go to Italy, and then these are hard decisions right here to write down. I have to really think hard. And the third one was to be happy. Four and five I forgot. So when I came out of rehab, I knew that I wanted to be a comedian, so I wrote it down. So I said, I gotta push. So here we are, man. Talking to Philip Rodriguez.
That is fucking great.
Award winning.
He tells that story on the This Is Not Happening, which is a Comedy Central series, and it's on YouTube. You can find it. It's really well told in that.
Yeah.
Are you suggesting it wasn't well told?
No, it just was condensed version here.
It's a condensed version.
Yeah, dude. The other one was...
We're trying to pitch another documentary about Felipe.
Yeah.
A mockumentary about Rodrigo Torres.
That's interesting.
The man, the myth, the roach killer.
Are there great documentaries about comedians that you... You like?
No. One, yes. Actually, it's one. It was an HBO movie, and it was narrated by Robert De Niro, and it was on Lenny Bruce. And it was good. That's the one I know.
That was
actually based on a comedian. That was a good one. You saw Richard Pryor, what you liked, right?
Yeah. The Icon ones were good. I like it.
But the one with, Robert De Niro part of the
that
best.
That was really well.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to see it.
And also the Oscar Acosta Zeta one I saw too was awesome.
Oh yeah, well that's the best.
Who's the actor?
Actor is a guy named Jesse Celedon, and you know he.
Where's he from?
He's from here. He's from. Where's he from? He's from what's that place? Bakersfield.
Alhambra.
Bakersfield.
How did you miss the casting call for this movie?
You know, it's great because he really would have been a great buff.
Because
he really would have been a great buffalo. No?
Oh, I am the brown buffalo. I'm going to get that
bull in
now.
A china shop in our house.
How do you look in a wife beater?
Oh, he's got a poster. There's a poster of one.
We dressed up as Hunter Thompson and Acosta. Oh, yeah. Showing the photo.
That's right.
But Jesse Celadon is a great actor, and a guy named Jeff Harms plays Hunter Thompson.
Hunter Thompson with a good casting, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, went and it was fun.
Yeah.
Do you you dress up as Hunter and Oscar?
No, we did for Halloween last year. Or 2 years ago. We didn't do anything last year.
If you're in Loathing, you should find it right there. Check it out.
I'm going to find it. Just keep talking.
How long did the movie take to shoot?
It took about, it took a month. We rented a mausoleum. We didn't have much money. So there was this mortuary in East L.A., and they were really great, and they let us clear the dead bodies out. And we shot on a green screen there, and we used the embalming room where they, you know, dress up the bodies. We moved those bodies out, and we did the makeup in there. So it was a month, and then editing takes a while. You know, you got to put all this shit together, particularly when you don't know what you're doing, like me. And then we came up with a picture that I really like. Yeah. So we're off and going to get seen everywhere. And I'm happy about it.
You shot it on film?
Shot it on 4K, which 4K? Is, format. So
camera, right?
It's the same thing. They're all the same now. That was a brand, but it's the same technology ultimately. It's about the lenses and then, so when you see it on the big screen, it looks really beautiful.
That's what ours was showing.
If that was going to be a documentary about you, what would it be about your life and see you on and performance? And
I don't know idea.
Yeah. That's how it would be.
Yeah.
A lot of offstage stuff. You know what? Felipe is the kind of guy that you can follow around all over L.A. And his interaction with everyday people is interesting, just as interesting as anything else he does. So.
And working with George was great because, you know, he has a lot of opinions about everything. George is very...
Right now.
You know, he's got a lot of edge and a lot of rage. And he's very insightful about a lot of things.
I'm going to show you his
he's been around,
picture right now here. Him and Paul in this movie years ago.
That's goodness. How's Paul doing? Is he working?
We're going to Hawaii together.
He's a good guy.
Actually, me and Paul Rodriguez are doing Honolulu.
Yeah, this weekend.
Neil's Blaisdell Theater Friday.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
We worked together a lot. Actually, we were in Tucson last summer with War, Malo, and Tierra.
That's real OGs, huh?
Real OGs. What's up, fool? We will find your you have an Instagram?
Yeah. But damn, wait a second. Isn't there a list
here?
Do
you know what the handle is?
I don't know the handle.
I don't have it on this.
That's all. Isn't it on this list? These people.
It might be
here
that.
It is. Oh, my Brown Instagram. Buffalo. Instagram. Brown Buffalo Film.
Instagram. I was guessing it is.
Brown Buffalo Film.
Brown Buffalo
Please Film. Find us on Instagram at Brown Buffalo Film. And on Facebook at Brown Buffalo Film.
When you're in the movie with Oscar... Prom queen in that photo?
No, he was prom. He was dating the prom. He was dating the prom queen.
And he got arrested, right? He was dating a white chick.
Yeah, he was a big. You know, he was top of the class. He was a class president of the junior class, and he was the varsity football, and he was the clarinet kid, and he was succeeding. He was this fat little Mexican boy. He got himself slimmed down, and was very bright. So he went to the top. And he was charismatic. So he became the top of the social heap. And then he wanted to date Lila Huerita. And he did until her old man said, it's typical La Bamba story, right? and the old man says, no, you're not. And that really busted Oscar up. Felt anger and shame. And the judge apparently, I don't know how apocryphal these stories are, but the judge says, you know, you can either go to jail or join the Air Force. So then Oscar joined the Air Force where he played in the marching band. In Panama. And because all the other soldiers he was with, all the guys in the Air Force, wanted to go to the whorehouses because Panama was a real... Panama has the highest rate
of syphilis, bro.
Of venereal disease among any American base in the world. And Oscar, he was kind of a straight-laced kid. So he converted to Baptist religion and he became a Baptist minister. And then he went out in the jungles to convert the natives. to Baptist. So became,
he wanted to do that or did part-time?
He did. I don't know the timeline exactly, but he drops out of the service and he becomes a Baptist. And he says, I became the Mexican Billy Graham.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's unbelievable. I mean, this is all really actually happens. You know? And then at some point, he realizes that it's a crock of shit, that he's selling a white man's religion to these poor Indians. And he feels terrible, and he actually tries to jump out of a hotel window. Jumps out of a hotel window in New Orleans, and he falls on a car, thankfully, and he doesn't die. And he says, I'm quitting God, right, as of this day. And then he's lost again. So he was bipolar, right? So he was get all really high and really get excited about stuff. And there was no medication. There was no diagnosis. He didn't even know what he had. He couldn't address it in any way. He kept on trying, looking for truth, for peace, and then he'd medicate himself. Once the 60s hit, he goes, oh, this is great, because he takes acid like aspirin to try to get his mind straight. And in a way, he did. In a way,
need to balance, bro.
And balance, yeah. And when he went into his courtroom, sometimes his most inspired courtroom strategies were he come up with on hallucinogens.
I like what the part where
that's
Lucy.
Oh, that's really great.
Yeah,
that's
you so wore great. No shirt, no undershirt.
I like that part where you mentioned that that fool be one of what he was, but then that fool liked the camera. He was always in the news, right? Like he was Johnny Cochran before Johnny Cochran. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point.
And actually fighting the same kind of law against the police. But then he said, but he'd be speaking and looking for the most interest Chicana in the room. Work in the room, man.
One time.
He was a player, right?
You know, he was a player. So one time, he's in a courtroom, and
what,
he sees
that. What doesn't he love too, bro?
He sees that this black woman in the jury box, in this kind of nice leg.
Yeah.
Together, like their faces together. Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's trying this case, and she's winking at him, and he's winking back. And she calls him up late at night one time, and she says, Mr. Acosta, there's some irregularities in this jury. They're against you, and there's some monkey business. So, you know, he spends a night with her. They're doing the deed. And in the end, he's able to call a mistrial and get his clients free because he was able to successfully appeal to this black woman who was a juror. So Oscar had, you know, he had wiles. He had game.
Crazy, man. But do you think he kind of did a disservice to the people he was representing to some extent because, you know, the top thing in a courtroom is respect. And he's flying in the face of that, kind of
fucking
on the edge,
the
but
case.
Over the edge very often. But he's messing up the case. You could lose cases just based on respect,
on your
attitude. I mean, I've seen so many attorneys kiss ass. Like
you have, especially when you're on the other side.
And
man.
Yeah, so you're when you're desperate to win, but maybe he was working for free a lot of times. So, you know.
I think you'd have to ask each defendant to see what they thought about it. But
yeah.
Certainly in some cases, the point that he was trying to pitch to the Chicano activist was that I'm not just going to here to get you off a case,
right.
Or get
this is
but
to make
this
a
is about
point.
To make yeah. a bigger point.
Yeah.
Precisely, we're going to use your persecution as a way to advertise
right.
the persecution of our whole the injustice of the system.
So these people were ready to take an L
for
the cause.
And I think, in fairness, very often there were other lawyers.
Yeah.
There were MALDEF mm-hmm. lawyers or ACLU lawyers also in the stable. And Oscar became the face,
yeah.
the front.
He was the Johnny Cochran.
He was the Cochran, yeah. right? He was the showman. And in doing so, he was able to press the authorities and the police departments and the sheriff department mm-hmm. and punish them. They didn't like him because he was so effective. And he was like a Trumpian figure in that way, right? He's really good on camera. And people want to watch him. He was compelling, like most crazy people are. And he was just something you wanted to see. And so he knew how to press their buttons. So that leads us to another episode in his life when he runs for sheriff of Los Angeles County.
Yeah, it was funny.
He's got no money. He's got enough money for posters and bumper stickers. There is no campaign. There's a little office somewhere. There's just the Vato Locos and whatever he can come together with, and he gets 100,000 votes.
That's crazy.
And in doing so, of course, he loses by a million, but he makes a point. He uses that platform to make a point about police brutality,
yeah.
about who the police represent and who they don't.
And he gets heard on that platform. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yet, the Stay fact that the guy is a marginal figure in American history, the fact that Latinos themselves don't even know about him,
yeah,
it's astonishing. Like, what the fuck is wrong? So, actually, we did a 5-part podcast in the company to the film that we're going to put on the radio that explains a bit more, things more in depth. Because I think that Oscar merits people's awareness. And again, if the Raza doesn't know its own life, its own history, its own story, you're just completely beholden to the storytelling of other groups.
Yeah.
That have all the fucking money, yeah, that have all the distribution capacity, that have all the publicity orgy they can throw at you to buy into their interpretation of reality. And that doesn't serve us, because they got an agenda. Storytelling always has an agenda, right?
Yeah, man.
Comedy always has an agenda and has a point of view and has an experience it comes from. It's not just sui generis. It comes out of a historical experience. Lenny Bruce very decidedly came out of a place. And so it's important, as you're ingesting entertainment, as you're ingesting comedy, as you're ingesting story, that you know what is the fucking agenda here. Who, in whose interest is that I fucking chuckle here? Because I might be chuckling at my own goddamn expense, and that's usually the case, right?
Yeah, man.
I mean, there's a reason that the people on top that have a lot of fucking money, and there's a reason that people are eating shit on the bottom. And there are a lot of reasons for it, but one of them is how narrative gets organized, distributed, made, approved, written about, reviewed. It's an apparatus of, and I don't mean this in a paranoid way, in a conspiratorial way, but it's an apparatus of cultural control. So this must be challenged, and we must have people that are aware and awake and be able to speak to this issue of media literacy. Come on, kids. What the fuck are you ingesting? You know?
What's up, G? What you want to add?
Nothing, man. That was fucking great, dude. Thank you very much for doing that and actually bringing the story to light. And hopefully, many more people.
March 23rd. Mm-hmm. 23rd. On PBS.
9 p.m.
9 p.m.
And no Oscar story.
How much research did you do? How much?
An infinite time, amount of research. A lot. Like, you know, a lot. You know, we had a great team of writer David Ventura and people, Allison Sotomayor, the producer, and we dug in and we found everything we could find. Talked to people, call people that hated him. People hang up on you. His ex-wife, his brother, his ex-cunado, who hated the motherfucker. He said, "You killed my sister, gave her hepatitis." And, you know, from his needle use. So, I mean, it was great. It was a great adventure. It's like an Easter egg hunt.
And what happened to him, essentially?
Great question. It's a mystery.
Right.
There was no trace of his body ever found. There was no record. I mean, it was Sinaloa, Mazatlan, right? And this is then, but these are proto-narcos. And he was doing, he says he was going to go make a deal. And I think Mota, at least, Goka, probably, gun here or there. He wanted to come back on a boat from Mazatlan to the Bay Area to do some business. He was talking about trading arms. He was talking about making a revolution against Nixon, against the United States of America, with the Mexican revolutionaries and the Vato Locos.
Wow.
So, he had big dreams. He had big dreams, very little foundation, but big dreams. And somewhere...
It's not what I've done. It's what I'm going to do.
Maldito.
We don't know. And that's great, too.
Yeah. You have a Twitter, Philip?
I do.
What is it?
I have a Twitter called Brown Buffalo PBS.
Everybody follow Brown Buffalo PBS.
Yeah. On Twitter.
Yeah.
On Twitter. What's up, fool?
Yeah, man.
That's crazy, bro. I didn't know none of this stuff.
It's really nuts, dude. All that stuff he did, I mean, and from where he came from, El Paso, to,
Yeah, like right now everybody's all about memes, bro. Like, they're protected with all these memes. But no one stepping up and saying, I'm going to represent some of these DACA guys for free.
Oh, yeah, man.
Where's that lawyer stepping up, eh?
I think some of them have done
that. Yeah, there's
been some donation movements.
MALDEF is great. This guy Tom Sines that runs MALDEF is most chingon. He should be on the show. I don't know how much of a sense of humor he has, but he's a mark.
That's what makes some of these
He's
tough.
A fantastic guy.
You better dress well, because we'll laugh at his sweater.
No, he's a fantastic guy.
Sort of with a sweater full
of cats. When you're out there in the audiences, do you see that politics are changing? Do you get a sense that people are more restless or
they're crybabies, bro.
Tell me.
A bunch of snowflakes out there crying.
I mean,
they don't take it personal. They think it's too personal. Like, I always tell people, like, when they write about me, I tell them, don't write my jokes on paper. It's not the same. People need beers. People need to come from doing something crazy, like from a horrible job, to sit down and to listen to me and do my comedy. And I'm saying everything they think but don't want to say because they don't want to lose their jobs. I'm doing it for them. So I'm never gonna censor myself.
That's my impression. A lot of these people that they're a lot of afraid of their own shadow. They're afraid to say something offensive to their boss. I have friends that are like professors.
I don't want to start a problem, bro. I've been working here for a long time, bro. You just started here.
I got a mortgage.
You know what? Isn't that the case?
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of cowardice.
A lot of people turn into their parents.
Yeah. I can't, hey, bro. I like when people say, bro. I don't understand. Like I can't do that no more, bro, because I got a job for Disney now. But all your cartoons were political before. Now they're all bullshit.
Yeah.
I got a job for Disney, bro. I can't be political no more.
I feel like that you see a combination of things. You see at your shows, the portion of these social justice warriors who come down on him, it's very small. It's just a smattering. But it's an indication that this is what this younger generation is talking about and is thinking. They're triggered by certain words and phrases without hearing the whole thing, you know, or understanding how this could also open doors to communication, you know, or story or conversation, discussion yeah. about these issues. The comedy is another way at that. But I also see people who are burned out by any discussion on any side of politics, and they want a place to go where they don't have to hear it.
And that's what happened with the last election.
Yeah, no matter what they believe or who they support or don't support, they don't want to hear. They want a place where they can go and escape that discussion for a while. You know, it's in their face on Facebook, and they're fighting with their aunt about something on Twitter.
Fighting
you know?
With bots. Like,
fighting with bots.
I know, right?
And you get so incensed, and then you just need a little place to go.
A
where
time
it's
out
not,
of mind.
Yeah.
But there is a catharsis that happens in your shows, right? They're letting something off. They're letting
dying.
Some steam off,
yes,
right?
Definitely.
And how do you understand that? What are they?
They buy T-shirts.
Well, you meet with all your fans.
I meet them, yeah.
Most of the time.
I meet them.
Some of the bigger.
How do you deal with, like, people who see you as a hero, and when they look at you and they're all starry-eyed and shit? Is that a creepy feeling? Is that a good feeling? What does that feel like?
Oh, man. How much coke did this guy do tonight?
Why is he still holding on to me?
You're my hero, bro. You let go of coke and you became somebody. And I go, yeah, bro. You could do it too, bro. You're going to be a comedian, but you could become somebody too, bro. Put the pipe down. Go watch your kids. Go for a walk. Teach your kids how to play guitar.
Show them a little chord.
Show them two chords, bro. Tan, tan.
And a solo.
Not the end, just the ending.
So who did you look up to in
films?
That's
great. Film, I don't know, a whole bunch. You know, my dad was from South Central, and he was a poor kid, but he was kind of a loner and very, but he was bookish. So after the Korean War, he served in the war in the army, and then he got a GI Bill, so he got a house, and he had to go to college, and the federal government paid for it in those days. So he was able to go to UCLA, and he was, because he was smart and he was isolated, a very solitary person, he read a lot, and then he also watched movies a lot, and he listened to music a lot. So I had this great benefit of this father that had very kind of working class, poor origins, and he was always haunted by that, but also had a lot of interests, and movies were one of them. So as a boy, he would take me to the art, those days it was the art houses, there was no cable TV, there was three channels, for Christ's sakes, you know. And take me to the art houses and watch the movies, and watch the French movies and the Buñuel movies, and it's great. So by the time I get to 15 and I start seeing Steven Spielberg, I was like, get the fuck out of here with that. I wanted nothing to do with it. I didn't understand what was going on. It was like popcorn sales, man. It was dead, flat,
like
lifeless, phony.
Jaws.
Get the fuck out of here with that. I was out, and I just didn't relate. Didn't want any Star Wars. I didn't understand what was going on. It was, to me, like a fucking hustle. I felt like a... capitalism was so efficient, juggernaut trying to sell me goddamn merchandise. And I said, that's not what I want to do. And so I did something that's much less remunerative, but to me, turns me on. It gets me excited, makes me want to do it. And so that's what I've been after.
For you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. That's awesome.
What's up, Food Podcast with Philip Rodriguez?
Yeah, in the house.
Very
Brown Buffalo Film on Instagram. And go watch the movie, man, on PBS. It'll be on 8 o'clock, March 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. March 24th. And it'll be on for a while, right? March 23rd?
Yeah, it'll be on that day. Then it'll be on PBS Digital. So PBS.org or something like that.
Well, Rodrigo, any shows coming up besides Hawaii?
Nah, in April.
Where?
That's about that. In Whittier.
Neat flat. You got anything coming up? Dishes?
Toby Hicks.
I have Dishes. Nice.
April 13th.
Very nice. No, I don't have fucking dishes. I have a lot of shit. And part of it is doing your books and everything that you take for granted every day.
That's funny.
And your business. And your podcast. And your live shows.
Do tell.
He.
The other night, before we go, the other night, like, she told me, man, I lost 10 pounds.
I lost 12
pounds. 12 pounds.
Since January 1st.
Then in the middle of the night, I made her the best grilled cheese ever.
He did. He sabotaged me.
It was good, man.
It was delicious. Vegan grilled cheese.
What's up, Food Podcast, man? Everybody, man, thank you for listening. Thank you for all your comments. I read them sometimes, you know. I know a lot of you guys are truck drivers, and you listen to our, you learn a lot of stuff, and you follow the stuff that we mention here, man. A lot of people actually do listen and go to get the stuff that we mention here, like, actually,
somebody signed up for your acting teacher's class.
Yeah.
Signed her daughter up.
Yeah. Yeah. One of our listeners goes to the same acting class.
She sent her daughter to.
We had a little meet and greet, bro, in the lobby.
Let me get a selfie.
And people did buy that book, bro, the one that Dee Milliton wrote about Cat Williams. And they're going to go check out your movie. And
also that other book, Random Family.
Random Family.
People love that.
What's up, Fool? Philip Rodriguez.
Thank
tell
you.
Us something before you go.
I really had a good time here. Can I come back?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, brother.
Anytime.
Thank you very much.
Love to have you back.